We already know he's a legend, a pop culture icon, and a really excellent camper. But what we have to know is this. Is Indy a decent archaeologist? Mr. Jones, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. And you are an archaeologist, correct?
Yes, I am.
So what is it? Is Indy a decent archaeologist?
By today's standards of archaeological methods and techniques, I'd have to say no.
Thank you very much. There you have it. From the state of Indiana, he's the state's official archaeologist, and his last name is Jones. Rick Jones should know. We're Jonesing on Indiana this morning. Just can't get him out of my crystal skull. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Happy Friday. Good morning. It's May 23rd. Do you have something to say today about Indiana Jones, perhaps? How about the big production cuts at Ford? The Texas polygamy case has taken a big turn. There's plenty to talk about there. It's T-minus 5 billion years until our sun burns out. There's a bigger star exploding right now, though, kind of, and a war zone at the border. Stories from the streets of Tijuana. We want your stories, comments, and reactions at mytake@thetakeaway.org. And here's all the news. A total reversal in Texas after an appeals court decision in the polygamy case upended the custody status of more than 440 children. They were taken from the group's ranch by the state and put into foster care, but the court said the state failed to show the youngsters were in any immediate danger. The judge has 10 days to release the children, but the state could appeal.
Lately, you probably haven't driven a Ford. Chances are you haven't anyway. The number three U.S. automaker hasn't been profitable lately either and is announcing production cuts in North America of 15 to 20% over the next 6 months. The aid workers can roll. The junta in Myanmar has apparently relented on allowing international aid workers into the cyclone-devastated country after a two-and-a-half-hour meeting between Burmese leader Thanh Shwe and U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. The BBC's Jonathan Head has more.
Ban Ki-moon did describe the Burmese position as being surprisingly flexible. So all this stubbornness that we've seen, this intense fear of foreigners that we know is a hallmark of this regime, seems to have been relaxed for this meeting.
After spending months courting favor with popular evangelical conservatives, Republican John McCain yesterday rejected endorsements from two controversial pastors. McCain said he found offensive the views of Rod Parsley, who has claimed that Islam is a violent movement bent on destruction of the United States, and John Hagee, who claimed Adolf Hitler and the Holocaust was the fulfillment of a biblical prophecy.
I received their endorsement, which did not mean that I endorsed their views. But the comments made most recently by Pastor Hagee are just too much.
After McCain rejected Reverend Hagee's endorsement, Hagee withdrew his endorsement of McCain. And there is some breaking news, I believe, that some of McCain's medical records have been released. And some journalists have taken a look, and at least at CNN, they're reporting that he's cancer-free.
That's right. There's word of talks between the Clinton camp and the Barack Obama camp this morning about the possible Hillary Clinton vice presidential option. Femi Okeh will have more about that. We have a question for you. It's about air travel. It's about Memorial Day. If you were an airline executive and you wanted to charge customers for something new, what would it be? Tell us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. MyTake@thetakeaway.org. Renting the air sickness bag? How about that?
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com. The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org. And by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. Join the conversation, won't you? You can call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE for comments or questions, or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. We reported a moment ago that there are rumors of talks between the Obama and Clinton camp about a possible Hillary Clinton vice presidential candidacy. Of course, all it is Bill Clinton musing publicly that this is a scenario that's been reported by the New York Times and Time magazine. No specific confirmation from either of the candidates. We're turning our attention to the economy. Whether you are an auto executive or an airline executive, the price of fuel is is causing ripples throughout the economy. And the latest indication is from Detroit-based Ford Motor Company announcing cutting its vehicle production in North America for the rest of the year, fuel prices being the cost. Bill Vlasic is the Detroit bureau chief for the New York Times and has been following this story closely. Some people expected other automakers would follow suit with these kinds of warnings, but they didn't, at least not yet. Bill, this is a giant setback for Ford. Thanks for joining us. I have to think that the executives are really under fire here.
Well, these are very tough times here in Detroit for the domestic automakers, and Ford is just the one today that's showing the pain the most. These last rounds of price increases at the pump are killing the sales of full-size pickup trucks and the big SUVs, and these are vehicles that Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler have relied on so heavily for their profits for the last several years, and consumers are just fleeing out of that, out of these big trucks into smaller, more fuel-efficient vehicles.
Ford certainly was the automaker that first discovered the enormous profit margins that could be added onto sport utility vehicles and trucks, but they learned that back in the 90s. It seems like even as recently as 2 years ago, they were betting either that consumers were stupid and would continue to buy trucks or that gas would remain at $2 a gallon. And both bets are insane.
Well, I think the Ford executives would be the first to admit that they definitely underestimated the how high gas prices would go, and even in these last couple of weeks, I think the continued surge towards $4 a gallon is just it's a shock to the system. But there's no question that Ford invented to an extent the SUV market with the Explorer, and the F-Series pickup is the largest selling vehicle in America and has been for many years. They've been developing some smaller cars, trying to bring some of their vehicles over from overseas that are more fuel efficient, but it's a slow process and it may be too little too late.
And Bill, let's talk about the employees. I understand that throughout the auto industry since 2006, 75,000 jobs have been cut. How do you think this latest announcement is going to affect those employment numbers?
Well, this has been the most dramatic restructuring in many years in any industry, but particularly for the big three here in Detroit. The buyouts and early retirements of union workers has been extraordinary, but there is likely more to come. And where they take the, how much more can you cut to the bone? At some point, these companies have to decide, can we fill these factories with other products? But there's no question that they, Ford in particular, is committed to sizing its production to its demand. And unless these some of their smaller vehicles catch fire, and some of the ones in the pipeline get here very soon, there will be more more cutbacks, more layoffs, and more middle-class jobs lost.
And also, Ford's GM said that the consumer changes appear to be structural rather than cyclical. What does that mean exactly?
Well, I think he's talking about whether or not if gas prices, which is a big if, come down, people will come back to these vehicles. It appears that the big SUV is a dinosaur at this point. Other vehicles have been developed, crossover, smaller, more fuel-efficient, lighter trucks have been put out, not just by the big three, but certainly by Toyota and Honda. And people are finding that they meet their needs. So the structure of the industry, I think they're pointing at, is that the big stuff, the big road hogs that so many people love and so many people hate, have seen their day come and go. So with the pickup trucks, it'll be interesting because they're so closely tied to housing and construction activities. So many pickups are used for work. And that sector is depressed so badly.
Well, Bill, that leads to a question. I mean, you've already alluded to the fact that Ford has some unique dynamics at work here, but are we at all looking at more to come in the industry broadly? And then I have a very quick question for you.
Sure. I think General Motors is going to be in the same boat as Ford. They are a huge pickup truck seller. Chrysler, which is now privately held, a little more difficult to predict, but they cut their production pretty drastically earlier in the year, and But there's more changes to come, no question about it.
So, Bill, imagine you're an airline executive. I mean, you know, the problems in the auto industry are, you know, mirrored in transportation as a whole with rising fuel prices. And imagine you're an airline executive and you're trying to, like, figure out new ways to make customers pay for things you used to give away. What would you charge for on the airline this Memorial Day weekend?
Oh, I don't know. Do they make you pay for waiting in line yet?
Ooh, that's good. Big revenue stream there. Bill Vlasic, Detroit bureau chief for the New York Times. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Now, that was a good one, but we're going to move to Texas now. On a legal story, yesterday an appeals court handed a stunning rebuke to officials who took custody of more than 400 children from the religious compound of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a group that practices polygamy. The court ruled Children Protective Services had no legal or factual grounds for taking the children, much to the great joy of the children's mothers. The state does have the option to appeal, but Dick DeGaren, a famed Texas defense attorney and professor of law at the University of Texas School of Law, Dick, you call this whole tangled story a legal outrage.
That's what it is. You know, when the Court of Appeals in Austin issued their mandamus, and a mandamus is one of the rarest of lawsuits. It's an order by an appellate court that a district court must do something. It's not just a saying you were wrong and we're reversing your judgment. It's saying that you must return these children because the evidence was insufficient for these children to be taken away from their parents. And it really was an outrage for the judge in San Angelo to try to have a hearing and individually address what was right or wrong having to do with 460-some-odd children.
There really are two issues here, right? Whether or not the search warrant was valid, and then secondarily, whether or not the action to take the custody of the children, that was legitimate. And on both counts, the appeals court said that the state acted improperly, right?
That's right. That's right. The most improper part, though, was the taking of the children. The search warrant issue could be argued later on whether the evidence obtained was lawful or not, but to then take the children Child Protective Services just did that on their own. That wasn't ordered by the court. But what they must do within 14 days is have an individualized hearing on whether the child is in danger. And there was no evidence that the children involved in this lawsuit were in danger. The Child Protective Services had no evidence that could point to an immediate danger.
Well, Dick, and thanks for joining us this morning, by the way. I know it's a little bit early there, but
You know, you get up early out in the country.
You get up early out in the country, that's right. I mean, Dick DeGaren always has his boots on, that's for sure. Is this in any sense similar to the Koresh case? And is it fair to say that prosecutors in Texas sort of have it in for groups like this in a way that they're willing to really push the law?
Don't paint with too broad a brush. There are some fine prosecutors in Texas, but what this does show is that there is an intolerance to different ideas when it comes to religion. And the authorities were sitting on go, waiting to do something to these folks that were different from everybody else, living on their private ranch out in West Texas.
But let me just follow up a question on that, because we literally are just running out of time here. But what about the reverse? What if there was a child in the compound being abused in some way? I mean, what happens now? Is that child likely to make that call if they're in danger? And we have about 10 seconds.
Sure. That doesn't stop an investigation into real abuse. But what was done here, this was a hoax. This was based on a hoax call.
Are there any facts to that effect, that it indeed was determined to be a hoax?
The Rangers have investigated it thoroughly and have publicly said this was a hoax.
Dick DeGaren, thanks so much. He's a Texas defense attorney and professor of law at the University of Texas School of Law. And our question today to folks is, if you could charge for one more thing on the airlines, what would it be? And CLS PDX says, any day now we'll see coin-operated restrooms on board.
Well, that would bring in a lot of money.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, asking what is responsibility in this day and age? Everybody has their own opinion, discussions, and more at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everybody. Join the conversation, won't you? It's really easy. Actually, you can call us 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. We are always on. Our question today, airlines are charging for baggage. I'm sure you've heard about that. What are they going to make us pay for next? How about child-free flight, says Gay in Stoughton, Massachusetts. Anyone who has had to endure a coast-to-coast flight with a screaming child or a seat kicker behind them would be willing to pay extra for this. I know I would. Won't be flying with Gay anytime soon. Well, my family. No, we've got four kids.
No,
and thank you, Gay.
But Gay, I'm sure there's many folks who are with you. And talking about economic woes, this week there are plenty of indicators that continue to show rough spots. Unemployment benefit requests over the past month have increased. Oil prices are growing ever higher. And all of this, of course, is fanning market uneasiness, not to mention inflation worries, and sending consumer confidence to all-time lows. So if it's hard for big companies like, say, Ford, it's even harder for smaller companies, which create the bulk of new jobs in the U.S. We want to know this. How are economic troubles hurting small businesses? Either you work for one or you own one. Would like to hear from you. Hit us up at 877-8-MY-TAKE. And joining us now is Tiffany Norwood. She has a story. She's co-founder and executive vice president of Next Generation Broadband in Washington, D.C. You, Tiffany, are among the nation's small businesses that employ 50% of Americans. And you started with two employees. Mm-hmm. You just celebrated your 7-year anniversary. Now you have 20. And yep. Given what's going on in the economy, what kinds of things are you thinking about differently at work?
Well, you know, I mean, we're being squeezed every which way. Our sales are under pressure. Costs are rising because of the rising commodity prices and the falling dollar. And, you know, one thing that we've had to do immediately is become very efficient in our operations, but also look for new markets and new places that we can sell. Looking overseas, a lot of times small businesses especially don't really think about markets outside the U.S. But now with technology and everything, it's very easy to tap into mm-hmm. these international markets. So that's one way. And there's a lot of companies doing that via the internet, including PR firms as well as restaurants looking at things such as is there something that they sell in their restaurant that they can package as a cool American product and sell it overseas.
You're a service company, right?
Yeah, we're a service company.
But you mentioned rising commodity prices. You're not buying a lot of wheat or rice.
No, we're not buying a lot of wheat. But the way it affects us is that the rising oil prices, for example, we have a lot of travel associated with our business. And so similar with consumers, our travel costs are going through the roof, and it's about our third highest cost in our company.
And as you've said, it's very difficult for small companies to adjust for these radical increases mm-hmm. in prices.
Yes, it is very difficult for us to adjust, but some companies are also, say, if you look within the United States versus going overseas and trying to tap into some of those markets, are doing things more innovatively and trying to go to the upper end of the market, which isn't as price sensitive. There's a moving company in California that decided to start doing this thing called picture-perfect packing. So all they really had to do is invest in a digital camera. They take pictures of every item that they're moving and how it's laid out, and then they reassemble it in the house exactly the way the picture is laid out in the pictures, and they charge incredibly high premium price for it because they were being really hit hard with all the home foreclosures, et cetera, and their market was more the middle class.
So they could raise prices for that white glove premium.
Exactly.
It's kind of like TV crews. They can return the room exactly to the way it used to look.
That's the idea.
Most people don't even necessarily realize that TV folks are magicians. But back to your business, economic times forcing you as a business owner to really look at global markets? We talk about China and India all the time in terms of their burgeoning middle class, but you have an interesting take on how America is usually seen as a buyer's nation and how we need to flip that around, and that's something that you're doing in your company, as a seller's nation, because you want to sell to those burgeoning markets.
Exactly. You know, a lot of people look at the rise in the middle class in China and in India as a challenge for them, but instead I say look at it as an opportunity. They have a middle class that loves looking to America for pop culture and other products. And so instead of thinking traditionally about how you would use that as a market to source materials or to source services, instead look at how you can address those markets.
And sell something
and
to
sell
them.
Something to them, exactly, and make some money.
You told us about how you've been hearing about something that's actually very fascinating, which is if you are selling something, you don't in the United States, you don't necessarily just have to take dollars. I mean, gee, there's yen out there, there's euros out there. Perhaps you can do
aren't
a little.
Worth
I know currency trading as the weakening dollar just continues.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a lot of Americans in the U.S. in general typically only looked at the dollar, and we had a history of not taking other currencies and being somewhat afraid of other currencies. But you're seeing a lot of small companies taking dollars, both in the service industry as well as companies that sell products. I mean, sorry, taking euros and other currencies.
And euros are printed in much more fashionable colors.
They are. They look a lot better. And, you know,
they come in different sizes. You know,
since we started our company, it went from 89 cents to the euro to now $1.50 to the euro. So it's a good investment for the small
business.
So
you take euros?
We do.
You do take euros.
But not in cash. We have them wired in.
Tiffany Noor, we're going to ask you to stick around, but right now we're going to turn to some more headlines from Femi Oke.
At 28 minutes past the hour, an appeals court in Texas says child protection officials have no right to take more than 440 children from a polygamous compound in Texas. Israel's Prime Minister Ehud Olmert meets with police again today after corruption charges that are threatening his political survival. And in Myanmar, a country that's also referred to as Burma, the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon met for 2 hours with the government's leader. The junta has agreed to let in all foreign aid workers. Earlier I spoke to the BBC's Jonathan Head about what happens next.
All the aid agencies who've got people in there and many more waiting to get in are saying, you know, Are they going to require us to go through all the existing procedures, which are very, very cumbersome? When we get into Burma, will we be able to get down into the Irrawaddy Delta and help people? Right now, there are military roadblocks blocking all foreigners from going in. This is a very strange and difficult to predict government. Just because the top general, whose assent is absolutely crucial, but just because he says, all right, we'll accept all foreign workers, I think a lot of people are quite skeptical. They're not convinced that this will really result in a change of policy. And crucially, how fast can it happen?
An aid coming into Myanmar or Burma, as sometimes it's referred to, is very political because due to the sanctions, Jonathan and Dora, aid doesn't usually get in there.
Jonathan? Who's that?
John.
I'm sorry. I'm sure he was called Jonathan when he was naughty. Jonathan?
No, but it's true. Johnny, actually. No, but it's true. With commodity prices so high, there's actually all kinds of incentives to take the aid and to resell it and to produce it for cash. I just have a question for you, Femi. You have a couple of euros I could borrow?
I have some pounds.
You must have
some
euros.
Do you take pounds?
Oh, they're even more
pounds.
Valuable.
A pound is worth double a dollar. I'm crying when I go home.
You should buy some real estate.
Yeah, to all of us hedging our inflation bets with currency trading here on The Takeaway. Thank you, Femi.
Thank you, Johnny.
I can't go there. I can't even go there. It's not even,
there
I'm
you
not.
Guys
I just
go
can't
again.
Go
there you go.
The Takeaway is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Information at gatesfoundation.org. And by the Rockefeller Foundation and its American Worker Initiative. More at rockfound.org.
The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, now featuring Father's Day, a short film about a woman whose father left her when she was a child, and her daughter, who now wants to meet her estranged grandfather, if he lives long enough. Available at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everybody. As the Memorial Day weekend begins, we have a couple of invitations for you to join our conversation here at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. We've been asking, airlines are charging for baggage. What will they make us pay for next? Rich M. has my favorite. So did you want a pressurized cabin by any chance? Here's another.
Hi, good morning. This is Ethan from Brooklyn calling. They should charge per complaint. So any complaint, verbal, written, especially verbal, $10, even $5. I would rack up a ton when I fly.
Huge, huge new revenue streams for the airline industry. We've certainly solved that problem this morning. But I got some bad news for you, folks. Only 5 billion years to go before our sun burns out. The good news there is it won't become a supernova. No, our sun is too small for that. But a giant dying star called Supernova 2008D, a star that's 20 times bigger than our own sun, is being witnessed now by a global network of scientists and astronomers. It sent shockwaves literally through the universe and through the astronomical community. Heidi Hamill is a senior research scientist at the Space Science Institute. She says the discovery of this supernova exploding, it's from, you know, 80 million years ago or so, is a fascinating new development in astrophysics. At what stage of the supernova explosion are we at this point, Heidi?
Well, at this point, what we're watching is the fade out of the supernova. All right, the explosion occurred already, and it was actually not caught by amateur astronomers. This supernova, surprisingly, was caught by a professional astronomer.
Why surprising?
Well, the reason it's surprising is that most professional astronomers are usually staring at one tiny spot in the sky, and they're focused on whatever they're looking at, like a star or a planet or a galaxy.
To get their doctorate, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And so they aren't scanning the skies looking for exploding stars. And most supernova are found by amateurs who are just out looking, scanning through skies, looking at galaxies, and seeing an unusually bright star, and they report it. Well, what was spectacular about this event was that a professional astronomer was using one of NASA's X-ray telescopes up in space, and she, Alicia Soderberg from Princeton, was actually looking at a galaxy that had had another supernova that had just gone off, you know, just a few months earlier at the end of 2007. And while she was looking at that galaxy in the X-ray telescope, an X-ray flash occurred in another part of the galaxy. And that X-ray flash was actually the moment of the explosion of this massive star. Normally, we've never seen the star actually explode before. Normally, what we see is the remnant of the explosion. After this massive star collapses, it sends out a huge shockwave that blasts out the outer shells of the star. And as those outer shells expand, we see this huge brightening of a star. And
Heidi, I am so excited right now. I feel like I'm out in the galaxy. Now, the Swift telescope that caught these pictures has found a supernova that's called an LBC supernova. What does that mean?
It's actually the number one BC.
I see, one BC, okay.
We have different types. In fact, I made the same mistake when I was checking some things before.
Thank you for saving me.
There's type 1 supernovae and type 2 supernovae, and they're really fundamentally different. The type 1 that we're talking about here is where a giant star explodes all on its own because its core collapses. The other type of supernova is a type 2. That's where you've got two stars together, a giant one and a smaller one, and stuff from the bigger one falls off onto the smaller one and vice versa, and they cause these explosions that make the stars brighten.
Heidi, so, I read that this type 1 was 100 billion times as bright as the sun. Is that possible?
It's absolutely possible. Isn't that astounding?
Yeah, and there's no sunscreen for that.
Absolutely not, and that's why we're glad it's happening in a galaxy far, far away.
Oh, that's so cool.
I mean, you don't want those things happening next door to you.
But it actually happened 88 million years ago, right?
Well, that's right. You know, but that's because it takes, the universe is so big, it took the light from that exploding star, you know, 80 million years to get here.
Well, what can we learn from this supernova quickly?
Well, you know, what we're learning from this particular event, which is so special, is we're learning the whole process of how a star explodes. Normally, we just see the ending part of it. This is going to allow it. We've been able to mobilize all our telescopes around the world to watch the actual moment of explosion and death, if you will, and watch the dying process. And that may sound grim to you, but it's actually about life, because what happens when a supernova explodes is it spreads its material throughout the surrounding galaxy. And so all the elements that we know and love, the heavier elements, you know, the things like iron and gold and whatnot, those come from exploding stars. Normally, we don't have that kind of stuff around.
Heidi, got one last question from our friend Tiffany Norwood, who's here in the studio.
Heidi, you said this happened near a previous explosion. Are these type of supernova aftershocks normal?
Well, these two were on opposite sides of their host galaxy, so they really weren't related to one another. But we do think that, you know, where you have many massive stars forming, you are likely to have supernova triggering other supernova. Not in this case, but often this.
Heidi Hamel, thank you so much for joining us. She's a senior research scientist at the Space Science Institute. There's no excitement like a scientist
fascinating
going ape over something like that. She joined us from her home in Connecticut. Now we have something for Memorial Day. We want you to think hard about what Memorial Day means to you, especially if there's a veteran or someone who's involved in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq who you'll be thinking about on Monday. And we want you to call with your memorial for that loved one in your family at 877-8-MY-TAKE. We'll make your voice and your memorial part of our Memorial Day celebration. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE with your memorial for Memorial Day 2008.
Now we have more headlines from Femi Oke.
At 21 minutes to the hour, 8 years of medical records indicate that Senator John McCain is in good health and free of skin cancer. His campaign wants to show that McCain could handle the rigors of the presidency. China and Russia have signed a deal to develop a $1 billion nuclear energy facility in China as the Russian president visits Beijing. President Medvedev and Chinese President Hu Jintao also condemned U.S. planes for global missile defense systems. And I was very happy that I could say Medvedev.
I'm just jealous, actually.
Medvedev.
I help you later. In NBA news, Detroit tied up the Eastern Conference Finals last night, ending the Boston Celtics at home winning streak. I know, you're sorry. I'm sorry, too. The Pistons won 103-97. The teams meet again in Detroit on Saturday.
Pistons knocked them back.
Yeah.
They couldn't come back.
Okay, you guys. I know there's got to be more in there, Femi.
Oh, yeah. One more. Edvardo Munch's painting, The Scream, you know, the one with the skeleton and the hands to the face?
Yes.
Yeah. It was stolen a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. and now it's been found and it's back.
Really?
Yeah.
It's back in
Oslo's museum. They now have airport security surrounding it to make sure it doesn't get stolen again.
Macaulay Culkin will be so happy.
Why is that?
if anybody gets that joke.
Hey, Femi, with McCain, did they find a mini facelift or a tummy tuck? Because he's looking pretty good for being in his 70s.
Poor, that's harsh.
I'm curious.
Ouch. You're mean.
More later. More campaign coverage later on The Takeaway. Thank you, Femi.
You're welcome.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com. You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everybody. It's Friday. Of course, that means movie weekend releases. And unlike, you know, annoying networks like the E! Network that make you sit through all of the trailers for the week's movies, we, as a public service, put them all together in what we like to call the mother of all trailers.
I have to destroy a postal truck filled with lethal microbes before a doomsday cult or a terrorist group destroys the entire world.
This ain't gonna be easy. Not as easy as it used to be.
This is the first war ever to be 100% outsourced to private enterprise.
Damn, I thought that was closer.
Master!
You're a teacher?
Trade show producer.
Yeah, like I believe that.
in there some clips from War, Inc. and Postal that are being released this weekend, but it's all going to be overshadowed by the release of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And to review that movie for us this morning, Rick Jones, the state archaeologist for the state of Indiana's Department of Natural Resources, the person who led off our broadcast this evening. Rick, thanks for joining us.
This morning.
Or this morning, right.
Yes.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. You went to the movie last night. What did you think?
Well, I enjoyed the movie. It's more fantasy than reality, but particularly as an adventure, it was very interesting.
Now, not a surprise that it's more fantasy than reality, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean? Wait a second. You mean archaeologists don't run through the scenes and take away artifacts from sites?
Not to my knowledge. And although the adventure sounds exciting, usually it's a more systematic, more tedious, more slow process.
Now, have you ever in your life gone from an airplane to a car to a motorcycle in a matter of seconds?
I'd like to say yes, but no, I have not.
I see. Had you seen the other Indiana Jones movies?
Yes, I have seen all of them.
And as Rick Jones, who's the state archaeologist for the state of Indiana, has anyone made this connection between Indiana, archaeologist Jones, and you, or are we the first to do this?
There have been a few people in the past. A reporter back in the early 80s tracked me down as a grad student in Indiana University. And occasionally when I give a presentation or talk about the past, somebody connects with that.
And do you say to yourself, my job is nothing like the movies? Or do you say, gee, yes, I've seen those movies?
Both. I try to impart some of the excitement of doing archaeology, which is discovery of things that we don't know about, and but also to try to tell them about the reality of how archaeology is conducted.
Now, it's not likely that you're actually going to find the Ark of the Covenant buried in Indiana, but I'm wondering what sort of archaeological dramas occur in your life, Rick?
Well, archaeological dramas here take place in cornfields in Indiana and in the Midwest, including mound sites, and some of the mounds are quite sophisticated from a couple thousand years ago where the cultures had crystal knives and projectile points, all kinds of decorative items, pearls, silver, things like that.
Well, that's great. We need some pictures of those to put on our website, but we want to leave it there, at least as far as Indiana archaeology is concerned. But I guess we get a thumbs up on the movie from you, right?
Yes. I particularly enjoyed Indy's persistence in the quest for knowledge.
That's great. Rick, keep that quest for knowledge going. Rick Jones is the state archaeologist from the state of Indiana. Thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, a forum for examining the decisions that confront people trying to do the right thing. Discussions and more at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. Yes, we are The Takeaway, and we are on the air, but we are always on. You can join the conversation at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org, and we've got some responses on our question that we'll talk about a little bit later. But you may have missed this story. There's a violent storm brewing around the border of Mexico and the United States, particularly in the city of Tijuana, where there's a confluence of a crackdown on the drug trade in Mexico, and border enforcement in Tijuana near San Diego is producing a violent storm of murder and conflict between the authorities in Mexico and drug lords who are running rampant. Tourism has dropped by 90% in Tijuana, and shop owners are feeling the tension.
When the news travels and people hear it, then people get scared off. So with the customers, our customers will keep away for a while. That's pretty much the same. It's been happening for maybe all past year.
There's been an enormous decline in tourism since 2005, and covering this story is Richard Morosi. He's a San Diego-based border reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Richard, thanks for joining us. Give us a picture of what's happening every day around the border and who is producing this violence.
Well, what's going on is the Mexican government has initiated a drug war offensive against the existing cartels across Mexico. One of the fronts in the drug war is here in Tijuana, where a long-established cartel, the Arellano-Felix drug cartel, is trying to hold on to key trafficking routes here into California. And that's mainly the impetus to what's going on, what has been going on for about the past 2 years now.
So this crackdown is producing results, but it's also producing a kind of lawlessness because the cartels are no longer in control. Is that how it's working?
Well, what's happened is that the place has always been violent. There's always been infighting with the cartel. But what now is going on is that the Mexican military about a year ago came into town, into the city. It's actually not a town, but 1.5 million people here. And they started putting on pressure on organized crime. Organized crime is the operations have been disrupted. It's created dislocation, and they're fighting amongst themselves, as well as against law enforcement and the Mexican military here.
The level of violence has actually been quite staggering. I saw one number that said there's been between 1,200 and 1,300 drug-related killings so far this year. And this is the gangs fighting against one another as opposed to the violence that's going on between police and the drug cartels. And also, it's not just in Tijuana, right? I mean, it's rapidly spreading across the country.
Yeah, that 1,200 figure is across Mexico. In Tijuana, we've probably got about 2 to 250 drug-related killings. That includes fighting amongst the infighting among the cartels, cartel on cartel, and cartels against government forces, which include local, state, and federal agencies, as well as the military.
What's it like having 3,000 government soldiers and federal police on the streets of Tijuana these days?
Well, they've scaled down their presence, their visible presence, recently. Initially, they came out here and they set up checkpoints across the city, which angered a lot of residents because it was creating a lot of traffic jams. But nowadays, you'll see them once in a while in 2- and 3-car convoys, Hummer convoys, cruising through the city. But they're not as big of a presence, visible presence, as the local police, which does still most of the preventive policing around the city. The military generally, they'll be working support roles and raids on safe houses, and also taking on the cartels shootouts.
What do Mexicans think? Do they think that the government is taking the right, is producing the right strategy to confront this? Are they concerned over the long term that it's not going to work, or are they hopeful that perhaps it might?
Well, at this point, President Felipe Calderon still has high approval ratings, and largely based on his so far the firm attack on the drug cartels. But time will tell. I mean, it's going to be hard to sustain this effort because we're already a year and a half into it, and it's a mixed bag. I mean, they have had some success, but right now the sense is they could be overextended. The cartels are still thriving. There's a lot of murder and mayhem, not just in Tijuana, but across Mexico. So the key questions are, can he sustain this?
And is there some problem there, some sensitivity on sustaining it, because it may be perceived by Mexicans as a sort of quid pro quo with the U.S. administration, who's very interested in a kind of a crackdown?
Well, yeah, this was largely also initiated, though, by the Mexican government, because they realized that the cartels were getting a bit maybe too powerful, and they feared the Colombianization effect of Mexico. They don't want Mexico to become what Colombia was back 10, 20 years ago, where organized crime was actually threatening the power of the government. They didn't want to get to that point. So that was the reason they launched it in the first place. And now they want to show firm commitment because they do want this aid package, which could total about $500 million toward the drug war.
Richard Morosi, thanks for putting that in context for us. Richard Morosi is a San Diego-based reporter for the Los Angeles Times. And now, more headlines from Femi Oke.
Coming up at, where are we? 6 minutes to the hour. A Texas court says the state did not have justification to remove more than 400 children from a polygamist ranch. Myanmar's leaders agreed to accept all international aid. China appeals for 2 million tents to house 5 million people made homeless by last week's earthquake. The Ford Motor Company warns that more job cuts are coming, and there's a lot of Senator John McCain in the news today as well. He rejects two pastors and releases 8 years of medical records, which shows that he's very healthy indeed. And finally, how's this for a freebie? A Missouri auto dealer is offering customers who buy a car their choice of a free handgun or $250 worth of gas. Max Muller says sales have quadrupled since he started the promotion earlier this week. And Takeaway Team and Tiffany, which did more customers go for, the gas or the gun?
The gun, definitely.
Where was it again?
Missouri.
The gun.
Absolutely. Two people asked for $250 worth of gas.
Gun, gasoline,
sure.
Gun, gasoline.
I'm not even sure how to respond to that. Gas or guns?
It's America. America.
Yeah, uniquely American experience.
Yes, Second Amendment. Femi, you know, we don't often bring you into this conversation, but you don't have any choice today.
Mm-hmm.
What should we begin charging on airlines to make revenue for the
really
airlines?
Attractive single people sitting next to you.
Really?
And I pay extra for the
making
phone.
Making it a dating service.
Guy or girl? Guy or girl?
I think Branson's already thought of that. Thank you, Femi.
You're welcome.
All right, so we want to get some responses into the takeaway question today. Airlines are charging more for baggage. What can you come up with that they can charge for? Here's one answer.
This is Holly from New York. I think airlines should start charging to be seated in a quiet zone where you're guaranteed not to sit next to any babies or people who insist on talking throughout transatlantic flights when the rest of us are trying to sleep.
Hi, this is Brian from New York, and I think airlines should start giving away takeoffs and charging for landings. You can provide a sliding scale depending on how many thousands of feet you want to be above the ground when you jump out of the plane.
Oh, that's fantastic. That is really good.
Very, very clever.
Giveaway.
I hear the cargo hold is extremely quiet.
Yes. And it's not pressurized, but if you want it pressurized, that costs a little bit extra.
That's one of my favorites so far this morning from Rich M., saying, do you want a pressurized cabin by any chance?
Yeah,
I think that's kind of key
great.
To staying alive during your flight.
The price of jet fuel has jumped even faster than the price of auto fuel at the gas station. An outstanding price at JFK in 2002 was 94 cents per gallon. In 2008, it's over 360% higher at $3.50 per gallon. So we're supposed to be feeling sorry for the airlines, I guess.
Well,
but
I mean,
thank
it's not
you,
so
Bob.
Much feeling sorry, right, Tiffany, as a small business owner, it's about the reality of the cost.
It's the reality of the cost. I mean, gas prices are going up tremendously, and they're still trying to make money. So,
here we got one more answer.
My name is Larry Furman. I'm from Manalapan, New Jersey. And I think the next thing the airlines will charge for, well, they're already charging for excess weight in luggage. They're going to charge for excess weight in poundage. Yes, that's right. They will be charging big and tall people for being big and tall and fat. Fortunately, I'm not one of them. I only tip the scales at 200 pounds for my 5'5" frame. That doesn't make me fat. That makes me thick.
How about creating a program similar to the energy credits where those of us at or below average height weight ratio could receive discounts or be able to check luggage without additional payment? Love the show, says Gay. You make my commute so much fun. Thank you. Oh, fun commute? Oh, that'll be extra $10.
Yeah. We're going to start charging, too. Boy, we've got some ideas today.
Hmm. Keep your responses coming to today's question. We're always on at thetakeaway.org or 877-8-MY-TAKE.
And, of course, if you missed any of this, you can always listen to us and our podcast available on iTunes or on our website.
We have pictures of the supernova that Heidi was talking about earlier in the show on the website. And you can get a recap of the week in your inbox by signing up for our newsletter. Also, remember Memorial Day. We want your memorials to loved ones. We'll play them on Monday.
And our producer, Mary Harris, has a good idea. She says, keep sending those ideas about the airlines. You know what? We're going to just pass them right on to the airlines.
Tiffany Norwood, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Johnny.
All right. We'll see you on Monday.
The Takeaway is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org. The Rockefeller Foundation and its American Worker Initiative. More at rockfound.org. And by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is The Takeaway.